Hello, I'm Alia Adam. This is number 0131, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0131. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet lawyer Darren Cavanocchi. He's been on the show before. He's now the host of a new TV series called Deadly Sins, which uses the sins as a base for each episode.
Of course, it will be lust, greed, gluttony, envy, pride, anger, and sloth. But really what the show is it uses the deadly sins and frankly, to some extent, the corresponding heavenly virtues as a framework for analyzing human behavior, and specifically criminal behavior.
Artist Rob Sacchetto, who has a career doing zombie art.
So far, in the last 5-6 years, I've done over 2,000 zombie portraits of people all over the world. It's grown exponentially. It's amazing. I love it. I get orders, like huge amounts of orders around Christmas for Christmas gifts. And Valentine's Day just passed. I was deluged with orders again. So it's really great. I really enjoy doing it.
Stuart Nallman with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nallman. I'm attending my Beatle impersonation to say that this edition of Book Banter will look at George Harrison, Living in the Material World, and other Fab Four books that will have you screaming, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's coming up on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0131, was Alia Adam, who is a full-time journalism student, and she's also a part-time reporter at Global News in Montreal, the other place that I work. Thank you very much, Alia, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff here on the Stuff File program, which is now heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, here's another pro tip. If you find you're a fugitive of the law, updating Facebook with photos indicating where you are is possibly not your best move. 27-year-old Michelle Grasso from Italy disappeared in 2008 to escape a conviction for drug dealing. He ended up in London and was being rather successful at evading the law until he posted a photo on Facebook showing himself posing with a wax model of President Barack Obama in the famous Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. Italian police contacted their British counterparts, who found Grasso in a London suburb. He was quickly deported back to Italy, where he was arrested and transferred to prison to start his 5-year sentence. I'd make a person like this the idiot of the day, but frankly, this is just becoming too common. Case in point, still in the same vein, but on a less serious note, if you're going to poach North American salmon, it's probably not a wise idea to boast about it on Facebook. The Maine Warden Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are jointly investigating a report that an oversized salmon was illegally taken by an ice fisherman on Second Hadley Lake in rural Washington County within the past few weeks. The fish in question measured more than 25 inches in length, which under state and federal restrictions is too large to keep, according to Maine Warden Service Lieutenant Dan Scott. Scott said the angler under investigation, whom he declined to identify before charges are filed, was identified through a tip from what he termed a concerned sportsman. Now, Scott said both state and federal charges could be filed in the case. We haven't yet decided where this is going from here, he said. Now, seriously, isn't it just common lore that fishermen lie about their catches or the big one that got away? So maybe the guy's just lying on Facebook, too. Still makes him a moron, but could be a lie. Anyway, moving right along, like to be adventuresome? Well, the Windermere Suites, a 5-star bed and breakfast in England, is offering a special romantic getaway for three. For $500, three guests will get a weekend in a luxurious room, and the hotel will provide a triple breakfast in bed. Extra luxury touches include free champagne and chocolates and a king-size bed decorated with rose petals. Apparently, such offers are common in other European countries, but have never been available, let alone encouraged, in Britain. Owner Richard Kershaw said, "We know this sort of thing happens constantly on the continent, so in a show of solidarity with our smutty European neighbors, we thought we'd offer the same opportunity to our British customers." Well, can't top that quote, so let's just move right along, shall we? Now, 31-year-old Sheila Hershey holds a rather interesting world record, the world's largest breast implants. No kidding. And she now claims her 38 triple K, ouch, size breasts are what saved her life and enabled her to walk away without a scratch from a car crash near her home in Houston, Texas. Man, this joke just writes itself, doesn't it? Sheila says her giant breasts had an airbag effect, protecting the rest of her body from injury, explaining, "They cushion the impact of the blow. I would be dead without them. My breasts stop my face and my head from being hit. I'm very thankful for them." Ms. Hershey, who has had at least 10, count them, 10 boob jobs, says she's not done and has plans to increase her bust size to 38 triple M. We might note she wasn't wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash and has been charged with drunk driving, a charge, by the way, she denies. What I want to know is, at 38 triple K, how would she even wear the shoulder part of the seatbelt in the first place? Is that even possible? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Nicholas Spores, age 21, was obviously tired of being on parole. First, he allegedly cut off his electric monitor. Then, according to police in Cedar Springs, Michigan, Spores and an unnamed partner stole a snowmobile, complete with helmet and gloves, but ditched the snowmobile when it broke down. Police caught and arrested his partner quickly, but took a little longer to catch up to Spores, who was eventually found in a residence hiding under a bed. He is charged with stealing a snowmobile, breaking and entering, and being a habitual offender. But on a positive side, he gets the award for finding the wussiest place to hide. Under a bed? Come on, really? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Darren Cavanocchi is a Los Angeles criminal defense attorney. He's been on the show with us several times talking about big criminal cases that make the news. But this time around, it's Darren that's making the news because he has a new television show. It's Investigation Discovery's new series, Deadly Sins, which is premiering on March the 3rd. The series uses the seven deadly sins as a base for each episode. Darren's on the line with us right now from L.A. Hi, Darren.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So this sounds like an
pleasure.
Exciting...
Always great to talk to you.
Yeah, this sounds like an exciting project. How long have you been working on this to get it on the air?
It is an exciting project, and it's great to see it come to fruition. I suppose it's like birthing a child. We've been working on it for about 9 months, and March 3rd is our premiere, really, really excited to see that it's going to be on Investigation Discovery Saturday nights, 9 p.m., and I hope replayed frequently during the week.
Great. Now, as I said in the introduction, it uses the seven deadly sins as the basis for each episode. So give us an example of some of the things you're going to cover.
Well, of course, it will be lust, greed, gluttony, envy, pride, anger, and sloth. Really what the show is it uses the deadly sins and frankly, to some extent, the corresponding heavenly virtues as a framework for analyzing human behavior, and specifically criminal behavior. So, for example, in an episode that deals with greed, it's an hour-long show. In each hour, we'll be exploring two cases. And in the episode about greed, it will be two murder cases that were motivated principally by greed. And what was so interesting in doing the research for the show, while it's clear that people are motivated by a variety of things, there's a number of things that drive them, but it's so interesting to see how there can be predominant themes in terms of their behavior, and we really found that there were some very clear-cut examples where it was greed or wrath or envy, pride, lust, gluttony, these things that just drove people to commit, as the title suggests, deadly sins. We're dealing with murder cases, with homicide cases, and maybe one to keep the kids, make sure the kids are asleep before you put this one on. It's some adult content.
Now you're dealing with, I guess, actual cases that have taken place.
Yes, these are ripped from the headlines, ripped from actual events, and mostly of fairly recent vintage. But in each of these cases, these are true stories. And in the show, there are some aspects of it that by nature come to life through recreation. But most of what's seen is actual interviews with people that were witnesses or investigators, family members, prosecutors, and then, of course, with me as your host to guide you through the process. It's making for an exciting, fast-paced, interesting, compelling show.
Now, you've done a lot of television, done a lot of radio. As I mentioned, you've been a guest on not only this show, but my previous radio show, oodles of times, and people can see you on television all the time, but this time you're the host. So what's it like being on the other side of the microphone?
I gotta say, it was... I loved it. I really, really enjoyed getting to contribute to the show in that way. And, of course, I enjoy the work that I do as a legal analyst, getting to appear on your show. And as you mentioned, other programs, I frequently contribute on the HLN network and for Entertainment Tonight and The Insider and a bunch of entertainment-related shows. But there's something about this particular topic, and it may simply be because of my work as a criminal defense attorney. Besides that, I also work as a certified interventionist, so I do get to see especially gluttony, but each of the deadly sins in that practice as well. And I think both because of the subject matter, specifically dealing with human behavior gone awry, and because of my experience working in television, this was a uniquely wonderful experience, and I'm really proud of it, and I'm really excited to see how people respond.
Now, you've been at this game for a while. When you see these kind of cases, do you still get moved by the situations you see as a lawyer?
Very much so. I think, my goodness, it's so interesting because the criminal defense lawyer, in order to effectively do their job, in order to be able to hold the government to account to its highest stated ideals, you know, in the United States, in California, where I practice, the rules of the game, the rules of engagement are that nobody is to be convicted of a crime unless the government can prove each and every element of the crime charged beyond a reasonable doubt, to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. And if there's any doubt based in reason as to any element of any crime charge, then the accused is entitled to a verdict of not guilty. I mean, it's well understood that these are the rules of the game. And in order for the system to function effectively, those who stand accused have a privileged relationship with their attorney. And there are certain ethical boundaries about what attorneys can and cannot do, but in order to do their work, there's every incentive for the client, for the person who stands accused, to be perfectly candid and tell their lawyer everything. It's generally understood that the lawyer can't help unless they know what's really happened. The one thing any and every criminal defense lawyer hates is surprises, right? You never want to have that gotcha moment in court. And I think clients generally appreciate and understand that, and so therefore they're very candid with their lawyers most of the time, unless you get some real sociopath borderline personality, but that's another story for another show. Point being, though, in the criminal justice system, I'm the only one that gets to speak to the people to hear the real story. you know, police officers have often a biased or shaded view towards the work that they do in investigating cases, and they're often not getting the real deal from the client during those rare circumstances, or I wish they were even more rare when clients would exercise their privilege to keep their mouth shut. You know, Peter, a right isn't a right unless you choose to exercise it. But prosecutors, judges, jurors, they rarely, if ever, get to hear from directly from the accused themselves. And I think because I actually get to hear from people directly and hear the real deal, you know, to hear the real story, I think these kinds of cases and the cases generally that I deal with really do resonate with me on a deep, deep level. I think fundamentally what we're really about in my law practice is about inspiring people to appreciate that what seems like the worst event in their life, such as getting arrested, can actually be the catalyst for some really phenomenal personal change and growth, and you know, that it isn't the end of the world, but in fact maybe the best thing that ever happened to them to create a whole new world.
Working on a show like Deadly Sins, where you have some reenactment and you're talking about real cases, how much of the stuff you do has to be vetted by lawyers?
So interesting. Short answer, everything. And it's a kind of law that I don't deal with. You know, it's more of the civil matters where people are concerned about putting things on the air that could trigger lawsuits from folks. And certainly I think that ultimately went into the selection process in terms of what cases could be properly the subject of the show. But the overarching commitment is that the show delivers something that's really of value, and that the framework, the analytical framework of the Deadly Sins, and using that as a way to view human behavior, it really is going to be an eye-opening new way to look at ourselves, to hold that mirror up to folks and some very, very extreme behavior. Pretty amazing stuff what human beings are capable of.
The show is called Deadly Sins, and it starts with a 7-part series on March the 3rd at 9 p.m. on Investigation Discovery. Are you hoping, I guess you are hoping, that it'll get a second, third, and maybe even more seasons beyond the original 7?
Yes, I hope so. I believe March 3rd is going to be a premiere about gluttony, followed shortly thereafter by greed, and we'll get all 7 of them, and I hope that people like it. If they do, there's no shortage of material to put this analytical framework on, and I hope we'll be entertaining folks for a long, long time. 9 p.m. Saturday nights on Identification Discovery.
I thank you very, very much, Darren, for being on the program with us, and good luck with the show.
Thanks, Peter. Always a pleasure.
Darren Kavanocki, attorney and host of Deadly Sins on Investigation Discovery. You can check out his website at nocuffs.com, and you can also check out the Investigation Discovery site. And, of course, you can find links to both of those sites by going to thestufffile.com. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0131, and you'll find all the links.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
It's 12 times.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet someone who draws zombie portraits. Plus, Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter, and we will also have an idiot of the day. And of course, coming up right now, lots more Stuff File news, but I want to mention very quickly that you can hear the Stuff File program while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone or any mobile device that you might have. And when you download Stitcher to hear the Stuff File program, you have a chance to win some money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. Download it. It's free and takes just a few seconds to download. And then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Stuff File. And again, Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. So enter Stuff File, S-T-U-P-H-F-I-L-E, and get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites, and you'll get access to lots of other shows. Too many to mention, actually. Over 5,000 shows. And, by the way, there's no syncing. It's all on demand, waiting for you. Just hit play when you go on Stitcher, and it's as easy as that. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget to enter the promo code STUFFFILE when you register. Okay, back to the Stuff File news with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Well, Valentine's Day just went by, as I'm sure you know, especially if you forgot about it, then you really know. Well, I hope you had a nice Valentine's Day. It wasn't exactly a happy day in Malaysia, as government officials used the romantic occasion to once again crack down and arrest more than 80 Muslims in raids on shared hotel rooms. Now, religious authorities in the country say the holiday is synonymous with vice activities. Offenders now face 2 years in prison for violating qalwat, which is an Islamic law barring unmarried Muslims from being alone with a member of the opposite sex at all, much less in a hotel room. Religious authorities launched the campaign a week before Valentine's called Mind the Valentine's Day Trap, warning Muslims that the holiday is, quote, not suitable, unquote. Almost two-thirds of Malaysia is Muslim. Other faiths were not affected by the anti-Valentine's Day campaign. Some pretty archaic rules there. But they think Valentine's Day is a trap. Can't really argue with that. In Portland, Oregon, 31-year-old Nicholas Harbour swears he was only doing some Valentine's Day role-playing when he allegedly tied up his naked girlfriend, 26-year-old Stephanie Pelsner, and then threw her in the back of his Subaru in the early afternoon. But a witness didn't see it that way and called police. Officers continued to search the area, concerned for the welfare of the bound and naked female, when the vehicle was finally spotted and an officer made contact with Harbour, who, walking away from the car, and noticed a bound and naked female in the back seat. Harbour told police that the two were just having some fun, and Pelsner confirmed that she was voluntarily bound and nude. But officers weren't so quick to laugh it off, having dispatched 9 patrol cars to search the area. Besides, they felt the couple should have been considerably more discreet and not alarm other people. So Harbour and Pelsner were arrested on Valentine's Day and charged with disorderly conduct, but released later that day. Ain't love grand? and it will make people do some really strange things, won't it? Okay, here's a story that comes from my neck of the woods, right here in Quebec, and it's a Darwin file story because, as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. One young man is dead, another is facing a series of charges after a late-night stunt involving a truck, a sled, and a couch went terribly wrong in the Beauce region of Quebec. According to police, a group of young people decided to hook both the sled and the couch to the back of a truck along a rural road in St. Benjamin, which is about 325 kilometers from Montreal. As they were speeding down the road, another vehicle approached from the opposite direction. The driver of that car was unable to stop and struck the couch being dragged behind the truck, killing the 22-year-old man who had been riding on the piece of furniture. Nobody else was injured, by the way. The 21-year-old male driver of the truck fled the scene after the impact, but was tracked down by police a short time later. He is facing charges of dangerous driving, causing death, and leaving the scene of an accident. And the victim went from couch potato to couch mashed potato. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest with me, Peter Anthony Holder, on the Stuff File program, Dante Tulo, age 32, was building a shed for his Orland Park, Illinois backyard using a nail gun. You see where this is going, don't you? He managed to shoot the buddy helping him in the hand with it, but his friend only got a scratch. It was perhaps a warning, because a few days later, Dante shot a nail and the gun recoiled and whacked him in the head. Here's a quote. "I felt like I got punched in the side of the ear," he said. But he couldn't find where the nail went. He shrugged it off and continued working on, not realizing that he shot a 3.5-inch nail into his head. Did he think that maybe the nail was lodged in his brain? "It crossed my mind," he admitted, "but not in the way I wanted it to." Yeah, there's a pun you can't avoid, huh? It wasn't until 36 hours later, when he started feeling sick, that he went to the hospital to find out what was wrong. A CAT scan found the nail, which was removed in 2 hours of surgery. He says he was in too much of a rush, which caused the accident. "Besides the nail," he quipped, "I've had a lot on my mind." Yeah. I think he's covered all the bad jokes in his actual quotes. You could say he nailed it. Yeah. Let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Rob Sachetto is a zombie artist. No, he's not a zombie who does art. He's an artist who draws zombies. Rob's the author of several books, including Zombie World Weekly, The Celebrity Dead Exposed. He also has a blog and a website dedicated to zombie art, and he joins us on the line from Ontario. Hi, Rob.
How you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Nice to talk to you once again, sir. We spoke many, many years ago on the old radio show that I did. And I guess at the time we spoke, it was around the time, the first time we spoke, it was around the time when you, I guess, first started to do this. And I just want to know how it's been growing over the last few years.
Well, I primarily do zombie portraits. So that's my sort of base. And so far, in the last, I guess, six years, I've done over 2,000 zombie portraits, people all over the world, and it's you know, grown exponentially. It's amazing. I love it. I get orders, like huge amounts of orders around Christmas for Christmas gifts, and Valentine's Day just passed. I was deluged with orders again. So it's really great. I really enjoy doing it. I've been doing a lot of other zombie-related things, like album covers, and it's sort of picking up in other ways, too. A lot of people are noticing that, oh, here's this zombie guy who does this, so let's get him to do, you know, our stuff. So it's great. Yeah, I love it.
Now, when you say you get a lot of orders, are you saying that a lot of the stuff you do as far as zombie art is concerned is not necessarily celebrity-based?
Yeah, most of it, I mean, 95% of it is just people, you know, ordering a zombie portrait for themselves or for a loved one, or a family portrait, or a portrait of their pets, or what have you. It's just, it's amazing.
When you first started doing this, and I'm sure even now you still hear it, some people might think, this is really kind of ghoulish. It literally. How do you explain how it's become so accepted and has taken off?
You know, I get asked that often, and I don't know, because just recently, I just, like, the other day, did a zombie portrait of a toddler, you know? And you know, here I am, like, you know, doing a, you know, making this toddler a zombie. And I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, what's the deal? You know, their parents are getting their little kid, you know, done a zombie. And I mean, you know, if you've seen the zombies that I do, I mean, you know, it's a little playful, but it's still graphic. There's still, you know, graphic elements to it for sure. And you know, people are getting like family portraits. It's kind of like a wide open thing. Like people are sort of. They're not hiding it in the closet type of thing. It's right out there, and it's like, well, this is in our living room type of thing, and I'm doing like legitimately huge portraits here of families, and it's just awesome. But I still can't figure out like the whole, you know, the whole thing after all these years. It's like, wow, you know.
I'm kind of curious, having described the family portrait. I'm just wondering, has anybody ever come to you and said, I want a zombie portrait of my mother-in-law?
Not yet, but then, you know, who knows, they might not say it, but they're getting it, you know what I mean?
Gotcha. How did this all start for you?
Years and years ago, I was doing a lot, like I guess I was more of a freelance artist, and, you know, I kind of do any job for money, and I mean, I cut my teeth on a lot of different types of jobs. I kind of became diverse in doing basically anything. And for some strange reason, I found myself doing a lot of just regular portraits for people. A lot of people were portraits done, just straight up, you know, family portraits or portraits of their kids or whatnot. And I was really getting bored of that. I was really getting tired of doing the straight up stuff. So I decided one day to basically do zombie portraits of myself and my wife. Just really out of the blue. And a friend of mine, who's sort of a web genius, said, hey, listen, you know what, I'll build you a website, and why don't you sell these things and see how it goes? And literally overnight, we were bombed with orders. Like, it was around Christmas time, 06, 2006, and I think it was, you know, November, and I think I did like 150 like zombie portraits before Christmas, because we were just deluged with orders. I couldn't believe it. And I was working at the time too at this porno video store. So, you know, I had that going, and I, you know, I was doing all these portraits. So yeah, it just kind of blew up overnight, and it's been going ever since.
How long does it take you to do one?
An average like single portrait, anywhere from 3 to 5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's always based on an original picture, per se?
Yeah, people basically just go to the website, the Zombie Portraits website, and you just send me a JPEG, and you get the actual original painting in the mail, and you get a digital copy of it as well. So you get both.
Okay. Now, when did the celebrity thing start to kick in?
Well, the celebrity thing happened after my first book got published, The Zombie Handbook, which, by the way, last year just got translated into Spanish, so it's being sold in Europe, like all over Europe too. So, which is really cool. Based on sales for that book, they offered me a chance to do a celebrity, sort of like a celebrity rag, like entertainment type rag. And they wanted, you know, they wanted to have it in that kind of style. The publishing company wanted to have it in sort of that style based on some of the stuff they saw on my zombie daily website. So, you know, I had a few celebrities there. I thought, I'll just do some celebrities. And they saw that and they said, well, let's get them to do this mock celebrity entertainment magazine type thing. And basically that's where that whole thing came from. They really liked the celebrities from Zombie Daily. So I ended up doing over 120 celebrities for that book alone. So that was really great.
Okay, and the current book is Zombiewood Weekly, The Celebrity Dead Exposed, correct?
Yep, that's the one, yep.
And when did that come out?
That one came out in 2010,
right?
I believe. Yeah, it's hard to... I work so much, it's like hard to keep track of the, you know, all this stuff. But yeah, I think, yeah, that was two... Or two, you know what? No, I'm sorry. I think it was last year.
2011.
Summer of last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you working on now?
Well, I'm updating Zombie Daily, which is the largest. You'll find the most zombie art in the world on that site. There are over 1,100 posts. It's updated daily. I'm working on a huge series called The Heads of the Living Dead, which are featured on that website on a regular basis. I'm also working on getting a very large horror graphic novel published, which it's just in the lettering stages right now, so it's just being lettered. All the artwork's done, everything's done, it just needs to be lettered, and then it's basically out. I try to get that out on iBooks and Kindle, and eventually actually print a run of them. There's another huge side project that I've been working on for years. It's about to come out. I really can't say much about it, but it's pretty risque, but anyway, we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
And yeah, just more zombie portraits. You know, I'm getting, you know, strange job every day, so I'm loving it. It's amazing.
Have you become the preeminent zombie artist out there? I mean, do you even have competition of any kind?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, there's a bunch of guys that do, you know, horror art and zombie art, and you know, I don't think they do it primarily. I think they kind of do it, you know, if asked or when asked. But yeah, I'm pretty much, I mean, if you Google my name or if you Google zombie art, you're going to see, you know, in images, you're going to see like hundreds and thousands of images that I've done that, you know, you can pretty much say, well, this, you know, we want this guy to do our zombie, you know, thing, whatever that is, whether it's an album cover or a line of products or whatever it is. You know, as far as amount and expertise goes, I'm pretty much outmatched, or I'm pretty much outmatch anyone in volume and just, you know, expertise for sure. I can't think of anyone that does more than I do.
You never know where life is going to take you. I bet you never thought that zombie art would be your calling card to literally the world.
Never in a million years. When I was a kid, you know, I always thought, you know, I just want to be an artist. I didn't know really what. Like, I thought I wanted to do comics, and I wanted to draw, and I wanted to draw monsters and everything. And, of course, you know, everyone said, well, that's, you know, people just don't do that for a living, you know. And here I am doing it, and I'd never take it for granted for a second. I love it, and I'm so grateful for all the fans that I've got. And all the people wanting my art, it's just the ultimate blessing. I love it, and I love the fans for sure.
Rob, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us once again.
Thank you very much.
Zombie artist Rob Sachetto. You can check out his website at zombieportraits.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0131, and you'll find links to Rob's website, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Here's an interesting case. A man was playing a drinking game called beer pong in a pub in New York City. He played the game for 3.5 hours with his friends and became very intoxicated. Eventually, he took a bus home, but after leaving the bus, decided to walk across the highway. It was a bad decision. He was hit by a car and injured, but instead of taking responsibility for his actions, he hired a lawyer and sued the pub. In this day and age, you might expect a $1 million verdict. However, something unusual happened. Manhattan Judge Lucy Billings ruled that since the man voluntarily engaged in the game, his case had no merit, and she threw it out. Let's be fair. At a time when too many judges ignore personal responsibility, Judge Billings deserves a great deal of credit for doing the right thing. She provided a welcome victory for common sense, and that's a story worth sharing. Find out more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And with another edition of 6 Degrees of Bing Crosby. Oh, let me see. I'm sorry. No. With another edition of Book Banter. That's what I was getting out. Here's Stuart Nauman.
Thank you, Peter. How's it going?
Fine in use. Uh-oh, I hear a Liverpool accent.
You got it. Well, you know what? Since you mentioned 6 Degrees of Bing, there is one in this edition of Book Banter, but I'll tell you a little bit later.
Of course there, Of course there is.
Yes, I know. I mean, not for every segment, but, you know, I happen to find one for this one. But the reason why I took up the Liverpudlian accent is because on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to look at George Harrison. Now, the late George Harrison once said this to sum up his brilliant, multifaceted career in rock music during the short 58 years of his life. He said, and I quote, and I won't use the accent, "I play a little guitar, write a few tunes, make a few movies, but none of that's really me. The real me is something else." Of course, it was never easy for a creative, talented musician and guitarist like George Harrison to carve out a career in rock music under the shadow of his more high-profile fellow Beatles like John Lennon and Paul McCartney. However, Harrison's body of work that he accomplished before, during, and after his time with the Fab Four, as well as his high sense of spiritual and humanistic values, should be admired, appreciated, and celebrated. However, for many years, it has been overlooked. But with the recently released two-part HBO documentary, George Harrison, Living in the Material World, which was excellently directed by Martin Scorsese, and the companion book that was put together by his widow, Olivia, George Harrison, the Beatle, the musician, the spiritual being, and the man can finally get its due, and it's about time. In words and pictures, this wonderful life is recounted. But what makes it so enjoyable and so eye-opening is the story of how George Harrison managed to rise above the shadow of the Beatles. And how he did it leaves the reader feeling so impressed and so deeply moved. It just shows that George found that he could find true inner peace and spirituality while living in the material world. Now, but most of all, we get to see the human side of George Harrison, his passion for movies, which led him to create his own film production company called Handmade Films, which did a lot of the Monty Python movies, his enthusiasm for Formula One auto racing, his joy of gardening, and most importantly, his later years as a devoted family man to his second wife, Olivia, and his son, Danny, his only son. One of the most touching quotes I read in this book is at a time when Danny was a young boy and in school, he found through his schoolmates that his dad was a member of the Beatles because their favorite song was Yellow Submarine. And he said that your dad was part of the group that sang it. So afterwards, Danny asked George why he didn't tell him that he was a member of the Fab Four. And George just plainly replied, and I love this, he goes, "Oh, sorry, probably should have told you that." He had a great sense of humor, too, you have to admit that. Yeah. But the main strength of the book is the rich treasure trove of never-seen-before photos that powerfully relate to what George Harrison was all about. Many of them were taken by George himself or were taken with George's camera. My favorite is when he went to New York City in 1963 because his sister lived in the States. And this was about maybe 4 or 5 months before the Beatles did that famous trip to New York to start the British invasion. George Harrison, Living in the Material World, both documentary and book, is a wonderful tribute to the most talented, unique, yet overlooked member of the Liverpool foursome that forever changed the face of rock music. We get that rare opportunity to find out how this humble, talented individual managed to enjoy the life and career of a successful musician, yet forever remained humble and grounded towards enjoying a truly fulfilled life.
You know, there are probably 3 words that can best describe George Harrison in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
He's so fine.
But they mention how he put together My Sweet Lord, but they don't mention how the "he's so fine" angle comes in. But if you want to read a little bit more about the Beatles, if you want some illustrated good books, I recommend one of the first treatments of that of the Beatles history, an illustrated history. Excellent book came out in 1975 called The Beatles, an Illustrated Record, which the book was shaped like an LP. By Tony Carr. Excellent book. It was a huge bestseller back then. And also, The Beatles Illustrated Lyrics, in which it was basically a catalog of all the songs of the Beatles, the lyrics, you could read them out with these very fine, appropriate illustrations, paintings, pictures that went along with it. It was published about almost 40 years ago, and it's been a perennial bestseller, and it's always constantly reissued. And that should be on your Beatles bookshelf as well.
Okay, and what is our connection to Bing?
Well, it has to do with the Beatles. In 1970, Bing did an album called Hey Jude, Hey Bing, which did a cover version of Hey Jude. They know that's that latter part where da na 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 na.
Yeah.
Which lasts for about, what, maybe 4 or 5 minutes?
Right.
Well, Bing's version, and this is true, just goes pom 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 pom. Hey Jude, and that's it. If you want to hear it, it's on Golden Throats Volume 2, released by Rhino Records. Don't believe me? Listen to it and find out for yourself.
Hey Jude, hey Bing.
I'm surprised it was Hey Lawsuit.
I love it. Again, the book is?
George Harrison, Living in the Material World by Olivia Harrison, published by Abrams, a fine coffee table book publisher, and it's $45.
And how can people find you, Mr. Nolman?
Well, if I'm not on the Crosby Family website or on a little lawsuit in that respect, you can check me out every week in West End Times in print or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here on The Stuff File program.
The Stuff File.
And we're in the home stretch here on the Stuff File program. We have an idiot of the day coming up a little later on. Plus, of course, more Stuff File news right here, right now. You might say 30-year-old Misty Lawson of Kentucky has a few problems. On her Facebook page, she describes herself as a professional baby maker and says, I am a good person, but a little rough around the edges. I've got a hot temper with a short fuse. And by the way, she spelled little, L-I-L. She spent the, D-A, as around the edges, and with, W-I-T. So we know she's not a cunning linguist. Anyway, well, that short fuse got her arrested for allegedly punching her 10-year-old son in the face during the middle of an anger management course. She reportedly punched her son in the face and body several times during an in-home state-mandated class aimed at curbing her anger. Police said the assault left the boy with a knuckle-shaped imprint on his face, all because he allegedly called his mom the B-word. What a loving, warm family, huh? Luckily, a counselor witnessed the alleged assault and called police, who reported the incident to Child Protective Services. Ms. Lawson has a long rap sheet to go with her newest arrests, including possession of stolen property, marijuana possession, menacing, resisting arrest, and contempt of court. These stories never cease to amaze me when you think of the fact that you actually need a license to get a dog. In Ambridge, Pennsylvania, police say it was a little more than a confession that came out of 56-year-old Frank Lee Turner's mouth. It was a whole lot of evidence. After the car Turner was a passenger in was pulled over by police, Turner started an altercation with the officers, at which time they pulled out a taser and gave him a zap. After that, apparently 23 individual wrapped pieces of crack cocaine fell out of his mouth. So now he's looking at charges including drug possession, resisting arrest, and a few others. Man, who knew that a taser could turn you into a human Pez dispenser? And, well, this was bound to happen sometime. Somebody finally suffered a heart attack while eating at the Heart Attack Grill in Las Vegas. The unidentified 40-something-year-old diner was chowing down on one of the grill's signature 6,000-calorie triple bypass burger at the time. A waitress said he was having the sweats and shaking. Paramedics whisked the man off to the hospital where he is alive and recuperating, thankfully. John Basso, who opened the restaurant just last October, said, I actually felt horrible for the gentleman because the tourists were taking photos of him as if it was some sort of stunt. Even with their own morbid sense of humor, we would never pull a stunt like that. Meanwhile, the other diners kept downing their bypass burgers and flatliner fries during the ordeal. Well, as the saying goes, you are what you eat. Okay, Judy Sanchez was asleep, but awoke with a start by the sound of footsteps in the stairwell outside her Fitchburg, Massachusetts apartment. She went out to the kitchen to see who might be outside so early in the morning and arrived just as whoever it was started cutting through her front door with a chainsaw. Terrified, she ran to protect her 3-year-old daughter. It took 3 long minutes for the gang of 10 intruders to cut through their door, and they were heavily armed. They forced her to lie face down on the floor. Robbers? Nope. Gang members? Nope. They were FBI doing a drug raid with a no-knock warrant, but they had the wrong address. They kept her on the floor at gunpoint for the whole time, she says, for 30 to 45 minutes while her daughter screamed until they realized their mistake and let her go. She says she got a quick oral apology with no sense of remorse, just a little pat on the back and saying, "I'm sorry" is not okay, she says. Oh, what's that smell in the air? Yeah, that's the smell of salivating lawyers beating a path to her door, or what's left of her door. Anyway, I got a couple of Star Wars-related stories for you. In November, Ricky Latouche, and how do you go through life with a name like Ricky Latouche, age 30, was convicted in England's Preston Crown Court for killing his wife in a rage over her having allegedly destroyed the Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker memorabilia that he had collected since childhood. And in February, in Brooklyn, New York, Flynn Michael expanded his search for his stolen $400 custom-made lightsaber. "I guess that's the joke," said Michael, self-pityingly. "Some Jedi I turned out to be. I guess the Force just wasn't with these guys, was it?" Administrators at an Ohio elementary school said the facility was put on lockdown when a mysterious Mickey Mouse was spotted at the school. Superintendent Dante Zambrini said the mother, who dressed as Mickey Mouse to surprise her daughter's class at C.H. Campbell Elementary School in Canfield during a Valentine's Day party, followed procedure when she signed in at the office. But she did not tell officials of her plans to change into the Disney character costume in a restroom and change back after making her party appearance. "It was a case of Mickey Mouse was here, and then he was missing," Zambrini said. "Our building principal called our school resource officer, and the building went into lockdown as a precaution." Zambrini said the lockdown was executed perfectly and ended when officials and police spoke to the mother and determined she had no ill intention. You know, sadly, it's a Mickey Mouse world we live in, isn't it? And not ready for prime time, Mostafa Hendy was charged with attempted robbery at the We Buy Gold store in Hendersonville, North Carolina in December, but clerk Derek Mothershead stopped him. As Hendy reached for the money, Mothershead punched him in the face, momentarily knocking him out cold. He held Hendy down with one hand and called 911 with the other, and as the two waited for police, Mothershead handed Hendy cleanser and paper towels and ordered him to clean up his own blood off the floor. Wow. Derek don't play. Yikes. Anyway, time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
Marge Domarecki was rather shocked that a thief would steal a painting from her art gallery in Glenelg, Australia. "We're next to the police station," she notes. But that shock changed to actually laughing when the thief came back to claim his aunt had bought the painting and he wanted to return it to get her money back. Marge was out when the unnamed 18-year-old man came back, but her staff asked him to come back to speak to the owners. When he returned, and he did return, it didn't take long for the police to arrive from next door to arrest him. Officers searched his apartment and found the artwork hanging on the wall. The painting's title was not reported. So, don't know what the title of the painting is, eh? Well, I have an idea for a new title. Portrait of an Idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0131. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And at the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And again, that's 0131. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.